Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the hosts or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum, my brothers and sisters. With Allah's name, the most merciful benefactor, most merciful redeemer, praise be to Allah. We praise him and we give thanks to him. And greeting you once again in the greetings of Assalamu alaikum. I am Imam Shaheed Abdullah, the African Balalian American Griot. And this is inheriting the power of mental freedom. those of you who are just tuning in, again, I am Imam Shahid Abdullah. And we want to begin our program. Most of you who have been here for coming in for several weeks listening to our program, I just want to give you an update on who I am in terms of my credentials as Imam, a student for Imam Mahdi Muhammad. I have studied and researched the religion, especially Al-Islam, all the religions, but especially Al-Islam, as relevant to the impact they have on African-American culture. And I have over 17 years of formal education with a bachelor's degree in sociology and from Kane University. Additionally, I have a background in speaking and writing and things of that nature for over 30 years to different groups and different populations. Most important, I put together a great deal of research, independent research, which took me into the area and gave me the area of education, which gave me terms of independent studies, what we would call credentials, to be known as a Bilalian, African Bilalian American Riyat. And from time to time, we're going to explain that and explain what that means, that title, and what it means to us, all of us, individually and collectively. The program itself, we have some advertisements during the course of the program. We have to have some announcements made while you're listening. And then we also have some, after we have some announcements, we have some breaks that we take. And we have you, the listener, to ask questions to our guests. Our guest, we have a guest tonight, a guest brother, James Rashid. We're going to introduce him, and then he's going to give you his background and how he's helping the community and helping individuals and himself to develop in America. And you will be able to ask him questions. And before we get to his presentation, we simply want to update us on where we are in our studies and our understanding of where the African-American people are in this day and time and what we can do to better our situation and improve upon the conditions that we find ourselves in. We have a big effort going on in America to develop what we call a African-American culture culture center, one that teaches culture, not just like a museum. Most of us heard of museums. They have several African-American museums throughout the country, and we have been given those museums, given given authority to use those museums for what they were designed for. But as most of you know, the cultural center and the museum are two different facilities and sometimes two different operations. And they definitely use some of the same information, but for different purposes. A museum, for example, it collects that which is past, the history, and other aspects of science and things of that nature, and put them into a storage, it's a storage area, what a museum represents. It's storage and exhibits. It stores things of importance and exhibits them. Now, on the other hand, a culture promotes and develops the culture of which the center is open for. For example, it teaches math, it teaches science, it teaches the arts, for visual and performing arts and industrial arts. It teaches many things to advance the culture in which that center is open for. Now, those are the things that we need most in America for the African-American people. We need centers that go educate us. In fact, one of the great African-American historians and people we know, the one who brought us the concept of the African-American Culture Month, the Black History, what they call it, the Black History Month now. And when this person, Carter G. Woodson, when he started it, it was a week celebration. that he took in February. He started it. This was not started by the government of the United States. It wasn't started by any group other than the African American people. And Carter G. Woodson was the first to do it. And then some students out in Fenton University, they then took it up and turned it into a Black History Month. And then we find that now the government is sort of coming in on and giving some special recognition for it, but it was started by African Americans. And don't be deceived by these things that you hear in the news or places that make you think someone else started this, but it was the African American people who started this day to recognize education, to recognize the ability to teach ourselves, recognize the power of knowledge. And that's what that month is for. It's not to have a good time and you know, just sing songs, or even the idea of giving us information just during that month is not what this is for. This month is to celebrate the idea, to celebrate the idea of education for our people. Here's what Carter G. Woodson said. He said, those who have no record of their forebears, of what their forebears have accomplished, lose the inspiration which comes from the teaching of biology and history. This statement by Carter G. Woodson is so powerful that we have to take note of this. Those who have no knowledge, or little knowledge even, of what their forebears have accomplished, lose the inspiration. And they lose the inspiration because they have no examples no examples in which to move forward, inspirations to build better, to build a better country, build a better culture. We lose that when we don't have culture. Now, the history we have been getting over the years after Carter G. Woodson pointed this out in the 1920s, we've been getting history done by the European American, which gives us what they call Black history. They created this Black history in order to feed the African American people information that would not cause them to become inspired by that history. They won't become inspired. They become more of a sad or disheartened because the information that the European created in this Black cultural consciousness that they put into the country makes the African-American people not even want to be themselves. They don't even want to strive because the picture they get in their mind are pictures of people being tortured, people are being beaten, people are being struggling, people don't have any advancements in this country because they're all being held back. And this is a negative point of view. In fact, Margaret Mead, she wrote, she said that we have a great deal of knowledge more about the extent to which the human being is dependent on developing a positive identity, a positive identity. Some scholars and writers call it a self-identity, a cultural identity. But the identity is that it must be positive. What she is pointing out here clearly is that the identity has to be a positive identity. And she's saying that to that extent, it causes people to either advance, stand still, or actually go backwards. We have gone through much in America, but we've also come through much in America because many people, our people especially, have been given this misinformation, and what we hear are doing at AM 360 is giving you information that you haven't had, or information that is not told in a positive way. We're giving the positive point of view. In fact, we have something we're going to present a little later called The Death of Jim Crow. That whole area, the whole era of Jim Crow, we are showing that era in a way that PN American doesn't show that era. See, they show the era of Jim Crow. It's actually the concept and idea is taken from a minstrel entertainer where the European American used to dance and paint their faces about so they looked like an African American. And it was a comedy kind of program. And that era is what the European attached to the African American people. They call that era Jim Crow. And what they put with it, they say that that was the era that African Americans suffered most. That was the era where they couldn't buy, couldn't go into public places and things of that nature, had to ride in the back of public transportation. That was the Jim Crow era. You see, the truth of the matter is while that era existed, it wasn't African-American in a negative way. It wasn't affecting the African-American in a negative way. Now, certainly, the African Americans after, well, let's not just, I was going to say after the Emancipation Proclamation, but let's go back a little further. Let's go back all the way back to the Declaration of Independence, when the African Americans fought with the Patriots, the European Americans who fought against Great Britain, and we fought for our freedom then. That's when African American became free. And from that point on, we was making progress. But those who were still enslaved was enslaved in an illegal form of labor, because most of the Patriots and most of the Europeans and the Africans who were freed during that time felt as though the system of slavery should also be abolished. And because that deprived them of what the Declaration of Independence called for, when the Declaration of Independence called for the freedom of all people, they were created by with inalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's what the Declaration of Independence was citing. So at the end of that war, really the African Americans were free then. But to keep up the industry, the Southerners in the Southern plantations, they still needed manual labor and use the concepts and the laws and regulations that they had developed during colonial times, Africans from becoming wealthy enough from that form of labor. They didn't pay them well and they treated them badly. Some of them were treated very badly. But this was a time that the European American plantation owners wanted to keep that alive because they needed to make money, wanted to make money, and they wanted the Declaration of Independence not to affect that. But in essence, it did. But they went ahead anyway to establish these slave laws back then at that time, the colonial laws, that they used slavery to build their plantations and their wealth. Now, the African, during that period of time, was also gaining traction in developing in America. And by the time the Emancipation Proclamation came along, Africans had already begun to develop in America. They had already begun to develop their own businesses and their own way of life in America. And when the Emancipation Proclamation came, the Emancipation Proclamation Lincoln signed into existence, by that time Africans were moving forward very quickly. And to stop that, the European allowed what they call laws that prevented the African from participating in the development of America. This is where that idea came from, that the Africans were being held back during the Jim Crow era. The Jim Crow laws, these are laws. They gave these laws that would not let the African-American participate in America the same as European-Americans. But when you look closely at that, you find quite the opposite was happening. When you look closely at that, from 1896 into 1932, while the so-called Jim Crow laws was in place, the African-American people had made more advancements in America than any other ethnic group, any other group in America, more than the Chinese, more than the German-American, more than all of them, and at a faster rate and at a much more industrious rate. There's a book called The Negro Market. This book was published in 1932. And this book, it was designed to be information that the European American business people can look at and see that there was an advantage for them to do business with the African American people. It says the Negro Market is published in the interest of the Negro Press. Now, the Negro Press was back in the 1920s and the 1930s was a group of African Americans who controlled hundreds of newspapers in the African American community. That's how they got the information back and forth to their people. And in those newspapers, they had all the businesses and all the opportunities that people can have in doing business with the African American. This booklet, it pointed out that the African was living so well that if you went into the African American community, especially in Baltimore and other areas in the country, you would find you couldn't recognize the African American's residents from the European Americans' residents. Their neighborhoods were that matched in terms of affluence. The African Americans growing so rapidly during that time they called the Jim Crow era, they couldn't put it together. See, because up until that time, the European American didn't pay the African American too much attention. They wouldn't let them do certain things, so they really wouldn't pay attention. The African-Americans, when they found themselves not being able to go to the European-Americans' restaurants, they built their own. When they found they couldn't stay in the European-Americans' hotels, they built their own. They built their own depots, their own companies, the telephone companies. They had all of these things. At the same time, they was talking about the Jim Crow era. And it was so demanding that the economy that when the European American, when the country went into what they called depression, the African American community was affected very little during that time. They weren't affected very much at all. The book, The Negro Market, I've been blessed to be able to get my hands on the book, actually just in a way that I was just thanking Almighty God for giving me the opportunity to get my hands on one of the books. They're not on the market. In the book, and this is one of the reasons, this is probably the main reason they're not on the market, in the book it's stated that the African American, or they used the term Negro back in that time, it says that the Negro was becoming as self-sufficient as any nation would have done in similar conditions. Now, this is so powerful. If African Americans just talked about this in their grade schools or in their churches or in their masjids or in their synagogues or in those areas about what happened in 1932, the information that was accumulated in this booklet, they would have found that the isolation and self-sufficiency of the Negro in America was one of the most productive eras for the African-American people. It was so productive that the whole idea and scheme of holding the African-American people back, they had to change their philosophy. Now, when I say they, I'm speaking of a group, a fraction of the African, of the European-American people, or any other people who would hold back another people, hold back especially in this case our people, the African-American people. But they usually was a small group. And in one of my books that I have written, we call that group predators, financial and political predators, people who are trying to control the economy and at the same time control the power that controls the economy. So that way they would keep a great control over everything in the community and the country and the world. Those are the people who are making the rules and regulations. And sometimes it seems as though the president of the country and a couple of senators and people of that nature are making the rules and regulations. But the people who have the power, the economic power, are the ones who are making the decisions. They get together and instruct those who are in the political office to carry out the policies. They instruct those groups to make certain policies and rules that benefit these few, groups who control the economy. And many times we don't even realize it's happening. For example, if you ask the average African-American, no, let's ask the average person in America, who elects the president and the vice president of the United States? The majority would say or would think that the president and the vice president of the United States are elected by the people, the majority of people, which is absolutely not true. Majority of the people will vote for a party they represent and they would like, and in that grouping, they have what they call the Electoral College. The Electoral College doesn't work for any of the people, but the Electoral College is in place to cast a ticket at the end of the election. It's about 572 of the people to cast a ticket for who they think is the president and vice president. And when I say who they think, it's just like that. They have the authority, and they have the authority, and they have the backing to make the decision as to who is the president. Now, do they have to elect the one who won the election by a majority vote? No, they do not. Hillary Clinton found that out. Al Gore found that out. They found out that they had the majority of the votes, but they could not be the president of the United States because the Electoral College, the 572 people, didn't put their ticket in for them. That's the way the power structure is in America. Now, that same power structure is the power structure that makes the decisions and rules and regulations that govern you and my life. Even though we may not feel comfortable with those people they allow to come and become so-called leaders in the political arena. You see, the people in the political arena are paid handsomely to be senators and to work for the government, paid handsomely. Some of them are lifetime jobs. So they are not too apt to want to change that structure, figurative structure. But the people who need more help, who need the guidance and who need the opportunities to try to make the advancements in a free society like America, so-called free society, they are the ones that are denied by those who are in charge. And it's the same group of people, some very wealthy people, like Rockefeller, for example. Rockefeller wasn't in any of the offices, but at the same time, he asked the government to allow for them to take over the public education system. And they set up all of these funds to educate the African-American people in the way they wanted the African-American people to be educated, not as scientists. They put together grants. He wasn't alone. They were the families who have become the wealthiest in America and the world. They're the ones who got control of the education system. And this is why you find today that the African Americans are not educated properly. There's a book out and a concept, a miseducation of the Negro or the black man. These are books and information that earmarks the cause and effect of the condition. And the cause and effect of the condition are those who have that authority, meaning the power and the money, and they're making the rules and the regulations. Now, can America change that? Absolutely. Will America change that? I'm speaking about the people in America. Perhaps not. And they may not do that because they may not see that as a prime objective of theirs. Because the prime objective of the American may be very similar to the objective of the politicians, the objective of the people who have these offices. They get their living from being in office and making rules and regulations that allow one group of people to do some things and while they hold back another group of people. This is nothing. It's nothing new, what I'm talking about, but it's been kept from the African-American people. Same as we're talking about right now, this the Negro Market, this book, The Negro Market, and done in 1932. All that information is kept from us. There are certain things we may be able to do to avoid some of this behavior or to change some of this behavior of these politicians, an awareness of the people. It will take an awareness of the people that we need to become aware enough of our own history that we will be inspired enough to want to change the conditions. As long as they give a few of us the money and opportunity to appear to be well off, and as long as they give a few of us the permission, the slips to go back and forth through their communities, they can hold the masses in place, because the masses will see the few, like the great doctors, and see the few like the entertainers. The masses will see those few and think that we all are better off. But the truth of the matter is we are better off than some in terms of the value, are better off than some people in other countries. But this is not other countries. This is America. And in America, we have a free market society. The free market society dictates that the individuals can develop on their own and become as wealthy as they can from the goods and the wealth in the land. It dictates that. But once another group that's in charge put a law in place that you can't do this or you can't do that, or we won't loan you the money, or we won't give you this, or we won't give you that, then that stymies the growth of that group, that people. This is why it's so important to listen to some of the African Americans who are coming awake, and that we need to really start looking at the importance of developing our own banking system, our own credit unions. This is what other cultures are doing. You, those of you who live in areas where you have the people who speak Spanish, some of them are from Puerto Rico, some of them may be from Mexico, some may be from Colombia, but they speak Spanish. What they are doing, they are putting the Spanish-speaking people, institutions, to benefit the Spanish-speaking people, even though they may be of different ethnic groups or they may be of different nationalities. They still use that connection to build their banking system, to open up, and they use the banking system to open up automobile car dealerships, appliances, construction companies. All of these things are done through the economy of the country. Now, we can do the same thing, but the difference is we don't have the same kind of information to benefit our people like they have the information to benefit their people. And there's nothing wrong with them for having that information, because that's their cultural identity that we spoke of a moment ago when we spoke of this importance of knowing one's own history and culture. That causes one to want to be what their fathers were, what to be and do what their mothers and fathers and grandmothers and grandfathers. But if you don't know that story, if you think all they did was pick cotton, all they did was be under the whip of the slave lashes of the slave master, if you think that, no one wants to have that. This is why they push that kind of thinking in black history. We need to get away from this thinking that they have put us in. There's no such thing as a black man. There's no such thing as a white man in terms of referencing color. Color does not identify the place of origin of a people. Color is just what it is. Is a hue or a material, something to bring about a different shade of another piece of material. Now, you say, well, they're different shades of people. Yes, they are different shades of people, but that comes naturally from the earth. And you'll be very, very, very pressed to find a black people. You go in almost any country, you'll find them of different shades. You'll find dark people, and that's what the Portuguese word Negro means. It didn't mean black. That's an English word, black, to interpret that. Black. No, what it really was, it meant dark people. They're dark people. Some of them are not as dark as others. Some of them are darker than the ones you may be looking at. But it meant dark people. That makes more sense. It's talking about the flesh is dark, not that these are a particular people, like they're trying to make us believe. You know, they started this, and then we're going to go into a question, because we definitely want our guests to come in tonight. But they started this back in the colonial times, this idea of blackness, this idea of whiteness. Black came a little, in some cases you may research and you see that word used earlier in colonial America, but the word you won't see used earlier is white in reference to people. They put it in books now, but when you trace it down, you see they weren't talking about people were white. The Greeks weren't called white people. The Romans weren't called white people. You know what they were called Romans. You know what the Greeks were called? They were called Greeks. Italians were called Italians, people from Italy. They give a name to people because they come from a certain land, and that certain land produces a certain texture to the skin because that's the sun and the foods they eat causes the texture of the skin to take form. And the eyes, everything takes form because of the land that the people come from. So that idea is the idea where the Europeans tried to make believe to those who would listen and then made them by law. Human beings are identified by place of origin. If you're from Nigeria, you are a Nigerian. Egypt, you're an Egyptian. Now, both of those come in different shades. And hair textures are different in all of those countries. England, all of those countries. France, all of those countries. That's the place of origin. That's how people should be identified. And African American was created here in America. There's no place in the land out there, and none of the continents, that you can go and say, these are African Americans. You can't do that. Of course, they're not African Americans. They're not African Americans if they're from New Zealand. They're not African Americans if they're from China. That's not an African American. African American are Africans who came to America either on their own or during the slave trade and began to mingle with each other and the people who were here, the Native Americans who were here, and many of them were African, and also with the European. And then at one part of the history in around 1835, around that era, they begin to breed the African slaves because the slave trade had stopped. England was no longer having the slave trade, the slaves being lifted up from Africa and brought to the Americas, especially the United States. So you have a mixture here. You have a mixture of a people who were brought here for one reason, and because they were here, we begin to change. When we begin to fraternize with each other and begin to marry amongst each other, we begin to change into a new form, a new form. And if we look at the evidence of this new form, we will find that these people that they call the Negro, or whatever name they want to give after that, they will find that these people had a genetic makeup that caused them to be great producers, even under harsh conditions. And many of the inventions and things that come into America are brought into America by these people, by our efforts, our knowledge. And so when we look at this concept that causes the African-American people to want to use terms like black, we're looking at a concept that really originated during the colonial times. Colonial America wanted to stop the progress of unifying people, whether regardless on the complexion of their skin. And they invented this concept called white people. This is in the law books. This is in the colonial law. This is the only place you find where the concept of identifying people as white people is in colonial times in the law. And if you trace down these other ways, you'll find that they get using that same concept. And they said that everybody who's called white have special privileges. And that was the beginning of racism. That was the beginning of this, what we have going on today. No matter how black you call yourself, it still means you're inferior to white. That's just the way it is. That's the way they made it. That's why they taught it like that in their black history courses. The reality is that we must recognize how we were created. We were created in America. And we're not created for the European American to take credit for this creation that we are. No, they don't take credit for this. They were trying to make another people. They were interested in making slaves. They're still interested in making slaves, those who are in charge. But the difference is that the creator of the creation, all of the creation, had instituted another behavioral pattern in the human being that automatically takes place when people come together. When people group together, they begin to form what is called a culture. And when they form this culture, they begin to figure out what's good for them and how they're going to operate, how they're going to develop, how they're going to grow, how they're going to produce, how they're going to get the best out of the land, how they're going to get the best out of their lives. That comes from this concept of culture. And the European didn't invent that. The African didn't invent that. That came from the Creator when man was created in order for the human being to make progress. The human being had to learn to collaborate with one another, even if it was an intimate level, where the people of the same tribe. But when they mixed from one tribe to another, that intimacy grew, and what grew from that is the intellect. The intellect even grew, because more ideas coming into an arena of knowledge, those more ideas begin to multiply. Just like a family, just like babies, just like a husband and wife get together and have children after having child after child after child. That's the way ideas come into a culture. Ideas, you have ideas on top of ideas. One idea leads into another. Look at the explosion of ideas in this modern day time. That lets you know how that happens. And the European is trying to hold back this particular process from the African-American people, from the African-American people African-American people begin to recognize that they are culture. And just being a culture, they have the right and opportunity to determine their values, determine their customs, determine their way, the way they look at the world, the universe, determine within themselves, and to look at religion. Not just one religion, but anything that calls itself a religion, the African-American people have the right from the Creator to examine that, to see if that's good for them or not. This is the power that this society, not the whole society, and that's what I want to mention here too, we're going to have to start changing the way we speak about people in terms of what they are. It's not the society that's doing this. It's the group that I mentioned earlier, predators, who are after the money and control of that money and control of the power. And they'll do anything to do that, to gain that. They want the land. They want control of the mind so they can gain that. So we want to open the floor for any questions, and we want to bring on our guests. But do you have any questions about what was said now before? You can just push the one on your phone, and we can bring you into the queue. And then we're going to have a advertisement, and then we're going to bring on our guests. Any hands up? Okay, let's start the you know, advertisement in for the day. And perhaps this can be what we want to do. So let us go to
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you, the one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum assalam. Thank you very much. We appreciate the announcements. And I want to introduce you to our guest for the day. And he's going to tell you about what he does and how he is doing things to help the community and himself and get everyone else some things that could be very valuable for you tonight, those of you who are on the line. But he has information that you can really use, really be of value to you. We want to bring him on. His name is Brother James Rashid, and he is a seasoned mortgage consultant boasting a multifaceted background in sales, loan origination, and processing. His area of expertise is spans from the FHA conventional and commercial and residential loans, and he's has developed the ability to work and by creating workshops aimed at the first-time homeowners and home buyers, and he. These workshops he has established helps the neighborhood, the revitalization in the neighborhood projects across Essex County and Union County. And I want to give you an opportunity to talk with him. So I want to bring him on and he can take you into what he does and the value of what he does. So I want to bring on Brother James Rashid. James Rashid, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes. He put it clearly.
Okay, thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. We have some listeners who may have some questions for you, but give us a little background on how you got started and maybe even where you live and families and what got you to this point. So could you give us that?
Sure, Shahid. Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate the time that you extended to me. To give you a little bit about myself, born here in the United States, grew up in Newark, New Jersey. Now I reside in Union County in Scotch Plains. I started this business as a mortgage consultant around 22 years ago. Prior to that, I worked in information technology, which is a really good field. I graduated from NJIT in engineering, but I never worked in engineering as I was working in IT, and I was making much more money in IT than the entry-level drafting position that I was offered. I worked in IT for 20 years, 20-some-odd years, and then got an opportunity to work in the financial area. In IT, I made a lot of money, and that was good, but I really liked the financial area more so because I'm able to touch people. I look at it more as a service business. I'm sure I happen to get paid, but I also enjoy the service part of giving back to the community and helping educate the community. I specialize in mortgages, but one of my pet peeves is also about credit and helping people to establish themselves as far as their credit is concerned. A lot of people just aren't aware of how much credit can impact them. Some are, but some aren't. You know, a lot of people find themselves in an awkward position of having not enough credit or bad credit. And when they go out there to purchase something, they're not able to get as much purchasing power as other people who do have good credit. So that's one of my pet peeves is to try to help people to establish themselves as far as credit is concerned. I mean, I can answer questions about credit. I can answer questions about mortgages, and I think it's really important that, you know, we try to obtain property. Some people don't have an understanding about how to get that. And, you know, I can help them in that area too. So if there's anything else you want to ask about those areas, let's talk about it.
Yes. Any if you have any questions about any of those areas, just put your hand, push the one on your phone, and we'll be able to bring you into the queue. Then you can ask some questions. Either you're a first-time home buyer or you're interested in buying a home, or either what I didn't hear you talk about, but imagine how you do. What about advice on how a person can use the concept of buying real estate, you know, homes, and leveraging one against the other, one in terms of credit, having the credit worthiness? Talk a little bit about that. Meanwhile, if those of you who want to ask a question, just push the one on your phone, and you'll be able to ask a question. This is very, very important that we own real estate.
Okay. So basically, it seems like what you could be asking is a qualification. And what we do is the first thing we do is look at their income as well as do a credit analysis. Credit is based on how you repay your creditors. And it goes by a credit score. You know, credit scores are tabulated when the computer, not the computer, but the algorithm looks at your payment history, if you have any collections, if you have any bankruptcies, if you have any late payments. All that is taken into account and is coming up with a credit score. Credit scores go from 500 to 800, thereabouts. If you know you have a good payment history, 12-month payment history of repaying your creditors, then you'll come up with a pretty decent score. But if you have any late payments, that deteriorates your credit. If you have any collections, that deteriorates your credit. If you have any judgments or charge-offs, that deteriorates your credit as well. So those are things that you want to avoid. And number one is late payments. If you're looking to purchase a mortgage and you can't pay a bill that's $25 a month, then they do not want to lend you $100,000 or $200,000 or $300,000 or $400,000. So it's important not to have any late payments. Collections, sometimes those can be bills that were overlooked. You didn't know you had it on your credit, so you have to challenge what's on your credit. You can always get a free credit report every year from the three different credit bureaus. So what we do is we look at what your credit is. We have any judgments, those are one of the worst. So you can call me individually. We can talk about that, but that's how the credit score is tabulated. So we look at your debt, how much debt you have, and we compare that to your income. You can have different types of income. You can work for a company where you have W-2s, or you can be self-employed. So we take that in consideration as and how much debt you have compared to your income, and we're able to tell you how much you qualify for.
Before I ask this question, let's take a question from the audience. Area code 972. Area code 972.
Yes. Waalaikum.
Waalaikum assalam.
Waalaikum assalam.
Ishmael family from Dallas. And I had a question about, you talk about mortgages. What about bigger things, like if you're trying to build a school or a masjid? If you're trying to, like, say you're trying to spend like $5 million and you have like $3 million, is it easier to get a loan for the other $2 million? Or what should I do? Islamic loan preferably, but what are the different options?
Well, that's not my area of expertise, but sometimes you can get grants when you have a project like that. So you probably need to talk to someone that can assist you if you don't have all the resources. To possibly get grants, state grants or city grants that's available, for that type of initiative. I basically work in the area of residential and some commercial.
Okay. Okay, thank you. So, all right, so, but in general, if you have a large amount, it should be a little bit easier, I guess, in general, to get a loan amount. Is that, am I correct in my thinking in that?
No, that's not necessarily true. I mean, I had someone who had a few million in the bank and they still want to qualify for a mortgage. What the mortgage companies do is your ability to repay. They don't look at how much you have in the bank. They look at your ability to repay. They want to see if you're working, that you're consistently getting that money, because you could take your $5 million and use it on something else other than paying a mortgage. But, you know, it seemed kind of like, well, if I have the $5 million, I wouldn't dare do that. But that's the security blanket, is to know that you're working for a company, or they're looking at your tax returns and seeing that you established a certain amount of income, you know, from that company or from your W-2s. But just because you have money in the bank doesn't mean that you're qualified for a mortgage.
Wow, thank you for that. It helps me out a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem, no problem. Go ahead.
What was your point? No, I was just going to say, what about leveraging? He brought up the question about having X amount of cash on hand or in the bank or some kind of policies of that nature. Can you leverage those to help go toward the payment of a mortgage? In other words, the interest is earned from some amount of money you may have, if it's up to $1 million or $5 million or so, depending on what he has it in, the interest that earned from that, can they use that, or they still consider that a risk?
That's a two-part question, because I had a client who had an annuity, and as long as that annuity, they can use that annuity as income for the next 3 years, then that could be used. But if you were talking about $3 million and using that towards a down payment, you know, you're buying something for $10 million or let's say $5 million and you're putting down $3 million and then you only have $2 million left, so you're making a larger down payment, so you can use it in that area. But if you're just keeping it in the bank, then you can use what the yield on that as income, but what, you know, what are you using for a down payment? So it was two parts to that. So you have to decide how is that going to be utilized.
Okay, well, let me see if we got any other callers on. I don't see any hands up.
If you have any questions, just push the one on your phone.
Now is let's take another call. Is it okay? We want to take another call.
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
Area code 914. Area code 914.
Yes, now, proceeding, but James.
Yes.
From the street. What's actually in that area? We hear a lot of people say over 60 years old that they don't have anyone, they don't want to leave their property to and things like that. About the last 20 years or so, have been a big push on reverse mortgages. What do you have your thoughts on reverse mortgages?
What is my take on reverse mortgages?
Yes, sir.
I think it's a very good program, especially if you don't have anyone that you're leaving your property to. Instead of having a lot of equity while you're holding on to that property, instead of you using your retirement or your pension to pay for the mortgage, and in some states the taxes are very high, to pay for a mortgage and your taxes, why not use that equity now? So you can use that other money from your pension or your Social Security to do other things in life, instead of putting that towards a property that if you live another 10 years or 15 or 30 years or what have you, you're not leaving that, you're leaving the equity to the state. You know, so why not take advantage of, you know, all the hard work and all the savings that you've done by acquiring this property and use it for that purpose instead of using your retirement to pay for a property or to pay for equity that you're going to leave behind to the state anyway.
Does that sort of answer your question? Yes. I guess one of my other questions behind that is big companies are buying up a lot of people's property. Uh, is any way that we as people that don't have a lot of money, don't have a lot of properties and things like that, how can we get around letting outsiders come in and buying up all our properties? Any way we can get around that?
Well, I think one is to understand why those properties are being purchased, whether they're going into foreclosure and they didn't have, you know, they're not savvy in the area of what's available for them when they do get in trouble. Some people don't like to express that to people that they are in trouble. Some people don't express it to their family members because they don't want them to know, or other organizations that may be able to help them. So I think when you are in trouble, when people are in trouble, that they can try to pool their resources. I think a platform like this is giving people exposure to, that can give people exposure to other resources that can help them to avoid foreclosures. Now, if you're talking about another avenue where people come together to look at property, I think that's to put their resources together to buy property so other people won't just come into neighborhoods and purchase them. That's definitely an idea. I think, you know, then you're also talking about people coming together to trust each other, and people learn more about what it is to acquire these properties, because they won't be buying them regularly like a owner-occupier, but they'll be doing it as an investment. So, yeah, you can get investment groups to try to find out or try to come together to pool their resources to purchase different properties like that. People who come in who are buying these properties are already associated with certain groups. I went to a closing where a gentleman was like 22 years old and he was buying a property. And I asked him, how did he do it? And he said he joined the group, and the group gave him the money and, you know, helped him with his background, with his credit. And then after he purchased it and fixed it, some people keep the properties for rental properties, but he said after he purchased and fixed it, he had to give them 10% of his earnings back into the group. And so that's one way of establishing an investment group. But I think people should look at trying to pool resources and look at other venues that they have, and to not to lose those properties. And things like talking about credit. You know, I've had one person who she was trying to refinance, and I'll just give you an idea of, you know, how being educated and or being savvy in the credit area. Someone was trying to refinance, and their credit score had to go 5 points. And I called them and said, okay, well, if you do this, then next month it should go up. I called the person, and I said, did you do this? And she said, no, because this company called me and asked me for my payment, and I didn't like it because they called me at work. And she didn't make a payment, and her credit score went down. So stuff like that, when people do throwing the baby out with the bathwater, can really hurt them. So I think we need to trust and go to the dentist when you have a toothache, and not go to the optometrist, you know, when you have a toothache. Because you can get wrong information just by talking to people casually and not going to an expert. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if that answers your question, but, you know, if you want to phrase it differently.
Yeah, you answered my question, Jane. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the your phones. Those of you who have called in, I'm going to leave your phones open. So if you have another question, you'll be able to ask that question. So your phones are still open. I just ask that you mute your phone, and then when you want to ask a question, take your mute off. You can mute it just by on your phone. There's a microphone that says mute. You can mute it that way. You can still be in the queue. Tell us a little bit about this industry. You build workshops and things of that nature relevant to how you help revitalization projects in Essex County and Union County. Those neighborhood products. How does that work? What is that about?
Okay. Before COVID, you know, we used to have venues where we invited people out and talked to them about the opportunities of first-time home buying and so forth. excuse me. And we wouldn't have them in different locations. Now what we're doing is more Zooming. We're having, you know, we have Zooms where people can sign up for first-time home buying workshops. Or if you have an organization, a church, or and you want to expose it to the parishioners, you know, we can have a Zoom call and explain to them the process of buying a home, where we would have a mortgage person, a realtor, attorney, a title person come in to give you exposure on, you know, the different areas that you need in purchasing a home. So I've done that, plenty of those, like I said, before COVID. Since COVID, you know, we did a few in Essex County, Middlesex County, Union County. But it's up to, you know, we have a captured audience that's interested in that. I'm willing to facilitate that. But I also like to mention that when I'm qualifying someone, I don't just talk to a person about what their earnings are, what their debts are. And obviously I do talk to them about credit. But qualifying for a mortgage is not just about that. It's also about budgeting, which is really important. You know, a lot of times we spend money that we don't necessarily have to spend, going out to eat, you know, the different type of clothing. A lot of us like to look good. But if you look at the mass people who are wealthy, they're not dressed as sharp as some of us are dressed. You know, so you have to look at how you're spending your money, how you're spending your time. So we look at budgeting, and we also look at setting goals. So when I'm talking to people, I'm not just talking to clients. I'm not talking to them just about what your earning is. That's the mass of our conversation. But it's also in budgeting, because when you're buying a home, you're not going to spend like you're spending when you're renting a home. Because you're buying a home, that's an investment for the future. One of the things that you did ask is one of the benefits of a home ownership, you know. And one of the benefits of home ownership is a big tax deduction, okay? That's one of the main benefits. But when you look at the future, you're also gaining equity in a home, where if you have a home for 5 years, if you buy for $300,000, in 5 years, maybe worth $500,000. You could take some of that equity out. If you know, looking to buy a car, for instance, the interest rate on your mortgage may be less than it is for an interest rate on a car. So I see some people refinance and add their car loan into their mortgage because the interest rate is lower. Sometimes you may want to take cash out because children are going to college, or you may take cash out to improve your home to establish more equity. As someone mentioned about the reverse mortgage, if you have children you want to pass it down to, and I think that's one of the most important things that we want to do if we're trying to create generational wealth, is to have something to pass it down to your children. You hear some people say things like, I ain't leaving them nothing, or I'm not going to leave them anything. You know, that's not the right mindset. And that mindset probably came from because of past history, but, you know, you're trying to change history at this point. You know, so you want to look at how you can live down, enjoy yourself, show your children, how to set goals and how to utilize their financial stability to move forward, to have them grow economically. It's not just a matter of getting education, it's what you do with that education. And I think, you know, through establishing property and passing it on or using the property to your benefit is a really important value. I had a client who purchased a home. I think he purchased it for $250,000. But a year later, when he did an appraisal, it was worth $350,000. So he came back to me 2 years later. He took $100,000 out and bought another property. And that's where you hear people saying, use other people's money. So you're not, you know, you start out using your money, but as you continue to grow with equity, you can take that out and establish more equity. And that's what I mean by using other people's money, you know. So there's a lot of benefits in, you know, obtaining property, and, you know, you can change your outlook of, you know, your financial wherewithal and your financial stability and your financial inheritance by establishing or obtaining property. Mm-hmm.
Using the equity. Now give us a little bit on, I heard it mentioned a couple of times, this reverse mortgage. Give us a little bit how that works.
Okay. Let me just, you're missing equity, so let me just do that for a minute. Equity is the difference between what you owe and what the value is. So if you owe $250,000 and you purchased that, you know, 5 years ago, and now your you know, the property value is 500, that means that you have 250,000 in equity.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take some of that out, use it to do whatever you need to do, but that's a different. That's what the equity is. The difference from what you owe and the value of the property.
Right. Now, is there a certain amount you can take out of that equity, or can you take all the equity out?
Yes. No, 80%.
80%, okay.
Yeah. So 80%, hold on 1 second. No, 8 times 5 is 400,000, right. So if you owe 250, you can take out 400, and the 250, that would be to pay off the first mortgage, so that means you'll be able to take out at least 150, and you still have...
Mm-hmm.
$100,000 in equity.
Okay. All right.
Right. So what is this pointing out to me? When you take out the equity, you're just adding to what is already owed. You're reestablishing a new loan. So you're paying off the $250. You're getting $150 out. So then you have a new mortgage of $400, but you still have $100,000 in equity. But to answer your question, you only could take out 80% of the value of your home.
Okay. And that creates another mortgage?
Yes, creates a new mortgage, yes, $400,000, yes.
Yeah.
But,
okay.
You know, what happens is, and this is when I'm missing the word savvy, this is where, when I first came into the business, you know, I was young in the business. I didn't know a lot about mortgages. And I said, oh, someone get a mortgage for 30 years, you know, why would they refinance? I just talked to someone that about an hour ago. Why would they refinance? Why don't they just pay for the whole 30 years and then call it a day? Well, people refinance for a different reason. One, I mentioned college education. Two, to fix up their home. Three is to get a lower mortgage. So we say, how will you get a lower mortgage? Okay, you had a mortgage at 250. Now you took out some of the equity and it's 400. But you're going back to another term of 30 years. Because you have paid it down some, you may get a lower mortgage if you had a lower interest rate. So even at $400,000, your mortgage may be less than it was when you bought it 10 years ago, where the interest rate might have been 8 or 9%. And then now your interest rate is at 5 or 6%. Even though you took out $150,000, you still may have a lower mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, most people saying, "Oh, I'm going from 250 to 400." Yes, but the terms could be different, so you have to look at it, and that's where you know you go to a mortgage professional to understand where you are and what's the best method for you.
Right. Now, the brother posed an interesting question. The brother from Dallas about the commercial loans. Is there any way that a person can parlay residential property into commercial loans if they have enough residential property and they still trying to, coming into a group and the group is trying to purchase another piece of property.
Are you trying to ask if people have a couple of residential properties and they can use that as collateral for a commercial loan? Is that what you're asking?
Yes. And how does that tie up the residential property?
Well, usually you don't use that as collateral. The short answer to that is you can't use that as collateral. They have to qualify for a commercial loan based on the credentials. And one of the credentials is not do you have other properties. The only way that they can parlay that into that is if those residential properties are income-producing properties, rental properties. So if you have five properties and each property is bringing in $3,000 a month, that's, $25,000, then you can say, okay, that's going to be my source of incomes. And they're going to look at your taxes, your business taxes, what's your personal, and say, okay, that's your income. So you can do that for qualifying you for the commercial property.
Mm-hmm.
Only if it's an income-producing rental property or income-producing property, you can use that to what your qualification. But let's say I have five properties and they're worth, you know, $500,000 apiece. That's not going to be used as collateral, no. Only the income, because you have five properties and they can be abandoned properties. So they're looking at if they're income-producing properties. Just like when you buy any commercial property, you're going to buy a laundromat. They say, let me look at your, let me look at the history from the seller. I used to think that was awkward. Like, why is the seller going to tell you how much they're making? But that's what they want to see when you're buying a property like, or a commercial like a laundromat or something like that.
Yeah. Now, we're going to take a short break. But before we take that short break, I just want to remind you all that you're listening to AM 360, Blog Talk Radio. And this portion of the program is uncovering, inheriting the power of mental freedom. And we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back and going to get – we're listening to James Rashid. He's a real estate mortgage consultant, which is giving us advice on many different aspects about mortgages and the use of mortgages. I think it's very important to take this in and be able to contact him if you have some things you want to talk about privately. But meanwhile, he's giving out information today. So we're going to take a short break here, and then we're going to come right back and remind you once again, this is AM 360, and this is Inheriting the Power of Mental Freedom.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you, the one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Yes, this is AM 360, and I am Imam Shahid Abdullah, your African, Malawian, American Griot. And for those of you who are just tuning in, we at the portion of our show where our guest has been James Rashid, mortgage consultant, and he's given us information regarding the use of mortgages and the power in which you can use those mortgages. I want to remind you all that we're here every week, every Tuesday, between 5:30 and 7. And this show is also followed by another dynamic show, Courtship and Marriage. So I want to turn the floor back over into the hands of Brother James Rashid. James?
Yes, I'm here, yes.
Oh, go ahead. Yes. The last question, I think the last point you made, I want to maybe go a little further. I don't see any hands right now. I see people here, some people. Those of you who want to ask the questions, ask them now, because we're going to be going into our final portion of the program. So,
okay, just for those, I'm sure they can contact you for my contact information, but my email address is James J. Rashid at AOL. That's JamesJRAS is the same. HID is in David at AOL. My cell is 908-230-5415. And you can always reach Brother Shahid, and he can give you my information as well. You did mention reverse mortgage. I'll just give you a little bit about how reverse mortgages work. They would only give you, they won't give you 100% of the value. They give you up to like 65-70% of the value, depending on if you own the house outright or if you're still paying, you know, for taxes or you still have a mortgage to pay. So based on that criteria, will determine how much money they can give you each month. You could take a lump sum of money because they still want to make sure that your taxes are being paid, whether they leave it up to you to pay it. But it depends on each individual. You would have to contact me, and I would have to massage what's best for you or to review your situation and go over what's best for you because you have several different options. I'm not sure if that answered your question about reverse mortgages.
Yes.
But that's a little bit
how
it works.
That answered, yes, I think that what you said, they take they give you a percentage. I think you said 60% of the value of the property, or is that the equity, the equity?
Well, if you have a mortgage, then it's 60% of, you know, you're going to have a mortgage and you're going to have some equity. So they do 60% of the value, and that covers the mortgage that you have, and then what's left is, you know, what they will give you of that 60%. Sometimes it could be 60, 65, 70, 75%, depending on how much you owe or if you even have a mortgage. So each of them are different. There's no one standard. And then they also factor in your age. You know, if you're 90 years old as opposed to if you're 60 years old.
Okay.
You know, because
Are they in some kind of insurance involved with that?
No, you're always going to have homeowners insurance. But their insurance is that extra equity that they don't give you. So that's the bank's insurance. But you do have to have homeowners insurance. Right, just to cover your, you know, in case there's any liabilities or what have you.
Oh, okay. So you're saying that of the 65%, of the 60 or 65%, they cover the other mortgage, and then the bank holds a percentage of that, like life insurance almost?
No. When you purchase a home, you have to have homeowner's insurance. Okay, that's not speaking of your life insurance. That's something separate.
Right.
But they want to make sure that you're paying your homeowner's insurance in case of a liability, in case of a fire, in case someone gets hurt. Okay, that's homeowner's insurance. So they make sure that your homeowner's insurance, your taxes are being paid. Now, you can take out a lump sum of money, and they'll tell you, okay, make sure you pay your taxes. But because they're going to have equity, that's why they're not giving you the full 65% or the full 75%, because they have equity in case something does devastating happen. And they had to take the home and sell it, they would have money to take care of that. Or if you defaulted, they would have from that equity, and they had to take your property back, they would have money to cover them. So that's the bank's insurance. As far as insurance, as far as, you know, life insurance, that's up to you. You know, most people, when they get life insurance and they own a property, they make sure they have enough life insurance to cover their mortgage in case something happens to them. So if they have $200,000 that they owe the bank, they may want to get an insurance policy for $250,000. It's because they don't want to leave their children with debt on a property. Some people look at it that way. Because it's a personal preference on what type of life insurance you're going to get. But that's usually separate than your homeowner's insurance. Homeowner's insurance is just to cover the home.
Okay. All right. So that cuts. So now, you want to do any closing remarks and let the listeners know where they can get in touch with you, your name, and things of that nature. You're in this area, right, the New Jersey area.
I'm also able to do loans outside of New Jersey, California, Connecticut, New York, most of the metropolitan areas. So have someone give me a call, and we can go over any logistics of, you know, purchasing a home. I just heard today that New Jersey, for those who are 60 or 60 and over, is one of the worst, number two, the worst state to retire in because taxes are so high. But it's also one of the best states to work in to make money to pay for those taxes. So it depends on how you look at it. But property, I think, is essential for us. You know, we've worked so hard for so long, and we want to change the culture, as you mentioned, change the culture, and we need to have economic power. There were issues before where we couldn't buy in certain areas, and I didn't understand the benefit of that. If we have a group of people that's able to buy in certain areas and other people who were redlined and couldn't buy in those areas, they couldn't grow equally, which means if someone bought a house for $200,000 20 years ago and it's now worth $1 million, and you weren't able to buy in that area, and you had to buy a house for $35,000, and it's only worth $200,000 now, you didn't grow economically the way that they did. So it's important to try to get on board in purchasing property by, you know, whatever it takes. And a lot of times when I find people who are qualifying, they get frustrated about what the requirements are, and they're like, why do they want to know all this information? Well, if you're able to give it to them, try not to be frustrated. I know it's not like going into a grocery store and you have $50 and you can buy $50 worth of food. You know, this is a little bit different. You know, these are checks and balances. They look under every rock, you know, and I think it's, if you know, your goal is to purchase a home, do what's, you know, what you need to do and purchase that home, you know, whether it's buying a home with someone else, if you don't qualify by yourself, if it's buying a two-family as opposed to a single family. A lot of people come to me and they want to buy a single family, and 5 years later it says, I want to buy two families as an investment property. And I say, okay, well, with a single family, you put down 3.5%. With a two-family, 5 years from now, if you're living in a single family, that becomes an investment property. You have to put down 20%. Okay, so what I usually tell people is buy the two-family first. Then have some rental income, and then later on buy that single family. Because when you buy the two-family for 3.5% down, then when you go buy a single family later on, that's a conventional loan, and you can put down 5% as opposed to trying to get a two-family at 20%. So I think, you know, trying to have property, acquiring property is essential. I also, again, James Rashid, my contact information is jamesjrashid@aol.com. That's jamesjrashid@aol.com. And my cell phone number is 908-230-5415. We're able to advise and help people in all states. Just give me a call and you know, I'll let you know how we can assist. One other parting thing I would like to add is for the men on the line, please get your prostate checked. Okay, I bring that up because I just heard last night that Martin Luther King's son passed. He's only 60 years old, I believe, from prostate cancer, you know. And I'm a cancer survivor myself, so I'm here to attest that, you know, get yourself checked out because you want to live on to be able to pass things on down to your children or to your family members. And, again, I'd like to thank you for inviting me. If you have any last questions, let me know. But if not, thank you very, very much, and you have a blessed day.
Yes. Yes, we thank you. Thank you so very much for coming on and giving us that information, because so many times it takes us around and around and around, and we never get information that can help us right away. And the information you have is vital information, especially for people who are thinking about buying homes, because the point that you made that is sometimes if you're going to get a home, it might be better to buy a single family as your first house. That kind of information, I think we don't get right away. You know, normally, many times, the first house is a single family house. And whereas what you were saying, that it's so much better to get a multifamily house, and then later on get that single-family house. So those of you who are listening, if you have yourself or a relative, this information we get here don't necessarily have to just go for you. It can go for a family member, a friend that you might know about, and tell them what you heard, and for them to look into it and be able to benefit from this information, because it's vital information. Just as vital as Brother James Rashid was mentioning, that we can get information that we can utilize, and if we don't have that information, then we miss the opportunity. When he talked about how properties appraise, you buy a house in one area, 10 years later, it don't appraise as fast as a house in another area, and it could have been basically about the same amount of money you spent for those two different properties. Just the area makes it a difference. And I think that's very important for us to be on the lookout and keep you know, in mind when our family members are buying homes or we buying homes and they're doing it every day. So you want to be able to give them some information about which they can learn from and go to someone like Brother Rashid here, James Rashid, and give us your number again, brother, so we can have that down.
Yeah, sure. Area code 908-230-5415. And also I mentioned that my pet peeve is credit. I'm licensed with Freddie Mac to do credit advisory. So those who are interested in purchasing a home, there's a lot of things we can talk about as far as your credit to enhance your credit. If you have challenged credit, that's one of my favorite areas to talk about. So, again, 908-230-5415.
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that area of credit cleanup, I guess, of credit strengthening is a very important area, because a lot of times people get in these bad situations and from college loans and from everything else that they might not pay off and end up with bad credit. It's good to know that you also do that as take care of credit. So you can call in and find out about these credit situations you may have, or you know someone has, one of the children or families. Get them in contact with James Rashid so he can help them in establishing good credit to move on and take advantage of this the situation. Because remember, real estate is where it's at. It's important to own real estate. And we got someone who can give us ideas on how we can get into that arena of owning real estate and using that real estate as possible collateral and keep building on it, we should take advantage of it. So I want to thank you very much for coming and explaining your position and helping people to deal with mortgages and how to expand their reach in terms of assets. So I want to remind you, too, you're certainly welcome. And you can always reach me at 908-296-2558 and get in touch with Brother Rashid so you can get that on. I want to remind those of you who are just tuning in that this is Inheriting the Power of Mental Freedom. And we come on every Tuesday, 5 to 7, every Tuesday, 5 to 7. And we're here talking about the African-American culture, how we can benefit from knowledge. And we bring the knowledge. Today we was talking about the book called The Negro Market. It's not a book that's on the market. We handle it ourselves. But this book talks about how the African-American people had grown so fast and so economically powerful between the areas of the Jim Crow, so-called Jim Crow area, which proved that Jim Crow was never a problem for us. Jim Crow was dead on arrival, because the African-American people, when it caused us to go to ourselves, become what they call segregated. That segregation, our foreparents took advantage, 100% advantage of it, that in just 36 years, they built some of the strongest financial districts in America. As I know you've heard of Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. They did all of that in just 36 years. Over 60 towns throughout America, they're established there. Here in New Jersey, alongside New Jersey, it's chartered by African Americans during that particular time in 1924. They chartered the towns and became very wealthy all across the country, all the way up to Seattle, Washington. The European doesn't like to tell this story because this story is a motivating story. They tell it in parts and they put the information out, but it's up to us. It's up to us to go get the information and use the information to relate to one another. And this is why I'm talking about this book now. And those of you who have the book or you have some of my other books, you should bring those books when you come online with this program we do here so we can go over the books and find out some information that possibly is not in the books that I may have put in my notes of that nature. For this book here, The Negro Market, is a powerful, powerful book of understanding. And it's a pictorial analysis. It's not a very text-filled book. It's a pictorial analysis to show and prove that between the areas of 1896 and 1932, the African Americans have become one of the richest cultures in America. And it was so powerful that this book here talked about the African American people as being as wealthy, or being as developing as much self-sufficiency as a nation would in the same time period. So it's very important that we get our hands on good information. And here at AM 360, we try to give you that information, not just the information you get in some of these schools and places that the European control the flux of the information, but we do it ourselves. We're developing our own institutions of the griots where we can research information for ourselves and bring it to us, the public. And we want to begin to collaborate. Those who do research, those who read, those who try to get away from the stress that's put on us by the society, we want you to be part of this growth and development of our people. Now, we have, following this program, you do know that we have a courtship and marriage that follows this program immediately at 7 o'clock. So stay tuned for that and stay tuned for the program. But those of you, again, remember my name is Shahid, Imam Shahid Abdullah, the African Bilalian American Griot. And this is a term, I want to leave you with this. The term griot is a term which talks about the people who are part of a commune and they keep the culture of that people. And that's what we're doing here. We're keeping the culture of the African-American people. We're giving the African-American people the opportunity to be able to learn about the culture. We have a questioner here at area code 727. Area code 727.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Alhamdulillah, this is Bilal from Hudson, Florida. Praise be to Allah,
yes.
Alhamdulillah. I was just listening to some of the compliments of the Moors and the things that they
mm-hmm.
did in traveling, how they dealt with France, the European, and civilized them and different things like that. And then I was
uh-huh.
looking at this scientific physician called Ibn Sina, and I said, that's where we gonna be at. Our children, they'll be doing these things in the science and and the medical fields and everything. So praise be to Allah. Mm-hmm. I'm glad.
Right.
I didn't know you had a program on, but I'll be on the program listening to you and offering whatever it is I can offer. But it's a poem I wrote I just like to share. The man knowing self, doing good deeds better than wealth. He needed to know what to do with his potential. Stay focused, think rational. The biggest concerns we must return, it's our return. Bigger interests, span out in mind, we are the best. We have been brought out for man development, community life, an excellent and productive environment, thinking process, guiding us to our best, understanding the universe, keeping God first. It started in sentiment, being concerned for life, and our future is in community life. God is revealing to us. This is the believer subscribing in God to totally trust. When you're free from your immediate task, still labor hard. This is what our imam taught. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam. Beautiful poem, brother. Beautiful, beautiful poem.
I'm gonna be on this show, brother.
Well, every Tuesday, we're here every Tuesday. Every Tuesday from 5 to 7.
Gotcha.
Alhamdulillah. And the name of the program, again, is Inheriting the Power of Mental Freedom. That's what we're about.
Okay.
We have to be able to control our minds and have to be able to understand, and we have to be able to teach ourselves, one. Two, we have to understand what we're being taught. And then we have
right.
to express that which we understand and put it into practice. See, those are the things we have to do
oh,
ourselves.
Well.
Everyone, every
That's
culture
right.
does that. This is no rocket science. This is what the Creator, Allah, has created man to be able to do. Every culture does this. And those who don't do it, they get left behind.
Right.
And because we have people in different countries, and they haven't practiced their culture, their cultural rights that they have been given. There are people who live in the jungle still, and some say they live in a life of peace, but actually they're living a life of being enchained by the ignorance that they have that imposes upon them the ability they have to think. The ability they have to think is so important because what man does to this whole creation, we are taking this whole creation apart and putting it back together according to our imagination. This is what an airplane is. This is what the computers are. They come out the ground. Everything comes out the ground. And we use our mind to engage. What some scholars call that the main marriage, the mind engaging the physical creation. That's the marriage, the
Great.
Greatest marriage of the human being. And that produces
right.
ideas and concepts and things. Like that's what
that's
we call
right.
children. But that's what the computer is, a child of man's ability to think. The car, a child of man's ability to think. Our clothes, man's ability to think. That's what that's all about. And when you're deprived of that, it is very difficult to produce those things for ourselves. And this is what we try to do here, is encourage us to think. As long as we are able to think and use that freedom, that mental freedom, we can figure out anything we want. We can figure out a way to develop. We can figure out a way to build the things necessary to rebuild it. We're working on a project in South Carolina that we spoke about a little earlier, a project of building a special African-American cultural center, one that's designed to teach. We're not talking about laying out the history and putting things just storing and exhibiting. No, we're not talking about that. That's a museum.
Great.
We're talking about something that teaches life and promotes life. And that's what we're building now. So you're going to hear more about it, and we want more of you to be participating in it. If you just come by and listen sometime, We're going to give you some more information as we go on and on where you can communicate
right.
with the development of this particular project. It's going to be nationwide. It just that's going to be the area. That area was chosen because that's where the area where the African-American people were brought in to America. Most of us came in, 70% of the African-Americans came into Charleston, South Carolina. That's where they were brought in. From the Africa, they opened the door to bring their people out Africa, and they opened the door here in America, in Charleston, to bring our people in America. We're going to close that door. We're going to close that door by building an what is called the greatest form of education, a cultural center. We're going to build that there, and the whole country will be able to capitalize on those efforts. Because we're going to be able to Zoom. We're going to be able to do things online. We're going to be able to do all of these things. And we're getting some of the better scholars to participate in this, scholars who are coming into the understanding that we are a people. Special people that we were created here in America to bring about a message that's going to help the world, really, because you see the world is in a real problem, and we are here to think and develop a better way for humanity. And don't be afraid of that
right.
thought.
That's what Imam Muhammad said. He said, "Look, yeah, you, it's all right. You say, go ahead on. Let's be separated and let's go ahead on and build out a community life." He said, "We can do it." That's right. He said, creation is constantly evolving us, and we don't even realize it. So praise be to Allah. Yeah,
that's
I'll
right.
be on the program.
You're absolutely correct.
Alhamdulillah.
You're absolutely correct. And, if you had another poem there, you have another poem there, brother?
Let me do this then. Praise be to Allah. A human being, Imam Muhammad said, he don't really like that word, human.
Can you hear the music behind him?
Yeah, here you go. Say a Muslim.
All right, go ahead.
Take by the best influence for man. The tradition of the prophet keeps us sane in a freakish, corrupt, sinful culture, all about wealth, glory, and fame. We should conform to the best traditions, which help us improve ours and others' conditions. We are blessed to have the best perception. To our love, we must make prostration. Heaven is a choice, not some place we have to find, investing in our souls, strengthening our mind. Soul purification, Quran, the best communication. Sharing with others is salvation. As we conform to the spirit that gives life, Shaitan and the deuce are in for a fight. W.D. Muhammad was blessed with prophetic insight. Obedient to Allah must never stop. He loves his creation Allah. His sincere servants receive help from creation, treasures, God's bounty without measure. We should be leaders in the saints. Natures and technology, all of this is our life's reality to benefit humanity. Like the prophet, we should be of mercy. The command is for Allah, the way of thinking keep man on top. When God duly proportion us in him, we should totally trust. The heaven is clear. Confusion must eventually and slowly disappear. Praise be to Allah.
Alhamdulillah. Beautiful, brother. Beautiful. Yes, that's a beautiful, beautiful poem, brother. It's if you come often, I'd like for you to sometime grace us with that your poem.
I am AM360. I was awarded AM360 Poet Laureate, so I got to go ahead on and do my job. I'll be on.
Good.
I'll be on.
That's a good thing. That's getting on with the message and getting on with what we are doing in terms of developing here and developing in America, because we have the power to do it, and we have the blessings from Allah. And another point we want to just close out with. We have to tell the story because other people are not telling the story. They're telling the story to fit their goals and objectives. Now, there's many of you have, whether you be Muslim or Hebrew, African, black Hebrews, or whether you be Christians, it doesn't make any difference. In your books, you will find there's a story about the people. There's a story about a people being born in a particular time, and they stayed in slavery for a while. Now, I know that the Jews have stole that story, and I do mean that. They stole it. They said that they stayed in Egypt for 400 years. Now, all of that is questionable because, you know, we in our history, we find that to be very questionable. But we do know for a fact, that the African-American people were enslaved here in America for that period of time. That's not an argument. They even say that's true. Now, what does that do? That tells us that story we find in the Bible and the Quran, Bible primarily, and Torah, story was a story about the time to come. It wasn't just a story of what was happening. It was a prophecy of what was to come. It wasn't a story about the Jews being incarcerated or being whatever in Egypt. It was a story that was put in pictorial language that will take place in a period of time. And we're in that time. So don't be afraid of the time. Let's make good of the time. So we see you again next week. That's AM 360. And this is Shahid Abdullah, African-American Bilalian Griot. And contact us back here next Tuesday and bring your friends. And let's develop our thinking and develop the places we are trying to use as places we can get our thinking working. I greet you all in the greetings of peace. Assalamu alaikum. And also remember, we have coming next in a minute, we have courtships and marriage coming on. So be here. Courtships and marriage. So thank you.